WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest Mary Harron directed and co-wrote the new movie adaptation of the Bret Easton Ellis novel American Psycho. She also directed the movie I Shot Andy Warhol. American Psycho is about a 26-year-old Prince of Wall Street in the 1980s who dresses in the right suits, applies daily facials, and has beautiful living room furniture and an attractive girlfriend. Although everything in his exterior life is perfectly controlled, he's going mad, murdering women in gruesome ways that were explicitly described in the book. Our film critic John Power said, Bret Easton Ellis' novel was intended to satirize Reagan-era greed, but he wrote it so ineptly that it was merely vile. Its idea has been redeemed by Harron, who specializes in brainy, aestheticized versions of tabloid material. Here's a scene from the movie in which the main character, Patrick Bateman, played by Christian Bale, is showing his new business card to his colleagues, hoping to show them up.
New card. What do you think?
Whoa. Very nice. Look at that.
Picked them up from the printers yesterday.
Good coloring.
That's bone. And the lettering is something called Cillian Braille.
It's very cool, Bateman, but that's nothing. Look at this.
That is really nice.
Eggshell with Romalian type. What do you think?
Nice.
Jesus. That is really super. How'd a nitwit like you get so tasteful?
I can't believe that Bryce prefers Van Patten's card to mine.
But wait. You ain't seen nothing yet. Raised lettering. Pale nimbus. White.
Impressive. Very nice.
Mm.
Let's see Paul Allen's card. Look at that subtle off-white coloring. The tasteful thickness of it. Oh my God. It even has a watermark.
American Psycho is about the extreme some people go to in order to be, or at least look, successful. Bateman lives in a world of perfect services, but inside, he's a monster. And in that sense, Mary Harron sees her movie as a horror film.
Part of it's sort of his disintegration into further madness. And it's also, I suppose, about how he tried this man who is deformed, who has nothing there. He's got this terrible void. He's just not a human being. How he constructs his surface identity so that he passes kind of, he hides his monstrousness with by wearing, you know, the perfect clothes and the perfect, being in all the right restaurants. So I guess that's what it is to me.
Now, the novel American Psycho was boycotted by Now in Los mm-hmm. Angeles for its gruesome violence against women. How do you think the movie adaptation compares to the novel?
Well, it's much less violent. I wasn't really interested in portraying the more, graphic aspects of the novel. I didn't think it would work on film. I mean, film is obviously, more powerful medium in that sense, and a little goes a long way. But I think that the book always had very strong elements of social satire that got overlooked totally at the time it was published. I think it's been recognized in the years since as a kind of quite a brilliant, social analysis of the late 80s.
How do you think your portrayal of sex compares to the portrayal in the film?
There's only one big sex scene in the film, and that's the one that got the censorship problems. In the novel, I've always taken it to be clearly a sort of pornographic fantasy because it's about a man with two prostitutes, one a street prostitute, the other an expensive escort girl. And he's paying for sex, but he writes in the first person in the novel about this sexual encounter as if it's an incredibly hot sexual scene. And to me, when I read it, I thought, oh, this is a sort of hilarious, parody, really, because it's written like one of those pornographic fantasies in a men's magazine, but it clearly is not real. Because prostitutes, who are being paid to have sex do not react like that. So when I was directing it, I had a different task. I had to show that it was him trying to recreate a fantasy. So I had Christian Bale, who plays Patrick Bateman, the main character, looking in the mirror the whole time while he's having sex with these girls. And then he's just ordering them around in a kind of curt way. And they look kind of bored and disconnected. And it's a disturbing scene because it's about sex as a transaction. And it's about, in a way, both the banality and the bleakness of that kind of sex.
It's also, I think, about sex as an act of narcissism on his part. It's like, how do I look?
yes, all those things. So it's not at all a sexy scene. We kind of put you off, I think. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, the censors focused on that, and we had to take about 20 seconds out of it.
No, it's funny. The character at the center here is a man who is satirized for the kinds of obsessions that we usually associate with women: having the right clothes, mm-hmm. the right home furnishings, the right facial cosmetics, a great-looking body, dinner reservations at the right restaurants. I mean, in your standard satire, it would be a woman who had those problems, not a man?
Well, that's what I liked about the novel so much, was that Brett had caught the vanity and narcissism of these very macho Wall Street guys. They're all mergers and acquisitions, you know, executives. And, they think of themselves as, you know, incredibly, you know, thrusting alpha males. But they act like teenage girls. You know, they backbite. They, you know, one of them leaves the table and the other one says, oh, he looks puffy. I guess he hasn't been working out, you know. They're incredibly competitive and insecure. And I thought that Brett, I've never seen anyone else capture that aspect of that kind of machismo society. But there is, you know, and there's a kind of a homoerotic undercurrent to it as well. But I felt like that, it seemed pretty devastatingly accurate to me.
Now, the novel, American Psycho, was criticized as anti-woman, and it's paradoxical, I suppose, that it's been adapted by two feminists, you know, you and your screenwriting collaborator, Guinevere Turner, who made the movie Go Fish, which is about a young lesbian woman.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there can be a very literal-minded judgment on content, I think, today in books and films. That if something is a portrait of misogyny, it is taken to be misogynist itself,
mm-hmm.
the book is guilty of what it is portraying. And political groups like Now, who are very effective politically, are sometimes, I think, very conservative and literal-minded in their judgments of art, or in this case were. I mean, the book does have some, you know, terrible scenes of violence I don't much like reading myself, but that doesn't mean that its intention was misogynist.
You mentioned that the sex scene in the movie, in which he's having sex with a prostitute and a woman who works for an escort service, ran into censorship problems. Was this the rating that you're talking about?
Yes, it was. Originally, they threatened to give it NC-17, and then I trimmed a few seconds out of that scene and was given an R rating.
What did you have to trim out?
Just a little bit of the more explicit sexual stuff. It's not a very explicit scene, but, you know, pelvic grinding, I guess you'd say.
Uh-huh. And how did you feel about losing that? Did you feel like you sacrificed the integrity of the scene, or was it okay to lose it?
I wasn't happy about it, but I felt better than I would have if I'd had to cut the whole scene. And in Europe and Canada, it's going out uncut, so mm-hmm. that's a great compensation.
So your alternative was to cut a little or cut the whole scene. The alternative wasn't to leave it alone and get the NC-17 rating?
Well, if you get an NC-17 rating, it effectively destroys your film, because you can't, there's many theater chains won't show it, Blockbuster Video won't stock it, you know, any film of any kind of budget at all just can't afford to do that.
Mary Harron is my guest. She co-wrote and directed the new screen adaptation of American Psycho. She also wrote and directed I Shot Andy Warhol. Now, when the main character in American Psycho brings women to his apartment to have sex and then murder them, he plays his favorite CDs by people like Huey Lewis in the News and, Phil, what's his name?
Phil Collins.
Phil Collins, yeah. And he gives these little lectures about them. Mm-hmm. Now, I know you used to be a rock critic before becoming mm-hmm. a filmmaker, and I'm wondering if the things that he says in the movie is inspired either by bad rock criticism or press releases.
Well, I have to say, I would love to take credit for these things. I didn't, you know, that's all in the book. They're one of the things that sort of made me warm to the book was he'll follow some quite, you know, horrifying scene with an entire chapter of music criticism completely out of context. It's just there in the middle, in the center of the novel. He'll suddenly write a whole chapter about Huey Lewis. And it's very funny. It's a very funny parody of rock criticism, but it's also revealing about Bateman, because in these kind of upbeat mainstream pop songs, it's the only place where Bateman actually shows emotion, where he seems to find a reflection of his own soul. And he finds depth and meaning in Huey Lewis and Phil Collins.
Now, it's very important for the main character in this movie to have the right fashions and the right home furnishings. This is how he defines himself. This is what he lives for. So did you want the clothes and furnishings to really say 1980s, or did you want them to be a little more timeless so that they could say now as well as then?
No, I was very specific about wanting everything to be late 80s. In fact, it was quite an ordeal, because the late 80s have not yet become a period that people collect. So actually finding things like late 80s cell phones or, you know, video recorders is not easy.
What about the living room of his apartment?
Well, I told Gideon Ponte, the production designer, that I wanted it to look like a page out of Architectural Digest, you know, in 1987. So it's minimalism, a lot of white, a lot of black, matte, you know, stereo equipment. And then the kitchen is stainless, a lot of stainless steel, because I like the stainless steel because it made it look like a morgue. You know, it's kind of sinister. And the apartment looks totally unlived in.
Christian Bale plays the main character, Patrick Bateman. What did you tell Bale about how you wanted him to portray the character?
We talked a lot about it over a long period. It's a difficult part to play because it's not a naturalistic character. It's not psychologically realistic. No one like Patrick Bateman has ever or ever will exist. He's kind of a construct. You know, he's symbolic, really. But at the same time, you have to make him believable on screen. So Christian and I talked about Patrick Bateman as being like a Martian who had come to Earth, who was pretending very hard to be a human being, but inside was nothing of the kind. And Christian says it's difficult because in most performances, you're trying to hide the fact that you're acting. But here, you had to display it, because that was the whole point. His whole life is a performance.
After you had cast Christian Bale as the main character in American Psycho, the movie production company wanted to sign Leonardo DiCaprio in the role. Why did they want to make that change?
Well, I think, you know, he was the biggest star in the world. I guess you can't blame them at the time. But I had already cast Christian. I felt very committed to him. And I also thought that it was a mistake to make it a huge budget movie with a big star, because you can't really afford to make a risky movie on that scale. And American Psycho is a risky movie in many ways. The riskiest thing about it, I think, is not the violence, because it's not particularly violent, you know, in a graphic sense. But the main character is somebody that people would consider extremely unsympathetic. You know, most stories about, you know, a serial killer or a murderer, you know, you make the detective the main character. But in this, you know, you do focus on Patrick Bateman, and that's an unusual move in the films.
I think DiCaprio would have made $20 million had he signed for this. That's what he was being offered.
Yes. And you know, in the end, the whole budget of the movie that Christian and I made was under $10.
Right. Yeah. So when the movie company told you that they wanted DiCaprio in the movie before you knew that he was going to sign for The Beach instead, what did you do? Did you say, then, I'm out, or, well, you know, we'll see what happens? I mean, how did you handle it?
I just said, I just disagreed very vehemently. And at that point, they wanted me to meet with, and I didn't particularly want to meet with Leonardo, because I felt that would just compromise my position. And, you know, they, I think, didn't particularly want to keep me at that point, because with a bigger star, they wanted a bigger director anyway.
Mm-hmm. So are there any movie-making lessons you learned from this experience?
I guess, you know, it is a great lesson, because, you know, it was my project and, you know, the script that I had co-written and had shepherded and helped sell, you know. I had gone around to many companies trying to sell it with the producers. I think it's amazing how expendable one is. You know, you should never imagine that you're not expendable. On the other hand, I think I did the right thing. At the time, I couldn't be sure. But I think if you're a director and you care very much about a project and you think that the casting is going in the wrong way and that you will lose control of the project, even if you stay on the film, it probably won't, it'll be a disaster. And I think that the person who suffers the most in those cases is the director. You know, it's not worth it.
Mary Harron will be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. Mary Harron is my guest. She directed the new movie American Psycho, which she also co-wrote, and she wrote and directed the earlier film I Shot Andy Warhol. Your earlier film, I Shot Andy Warhol, has something in common with American Psycho. Both films are about people who are mentally ill and mm-hmm. and willing to kill, or at least try to kill. Your film, I Shot Andy Warhol, is based on the true story of Valerie Solanas, who shot Andy Warhol and nearly killed him. Mm-hmm. But you know, fortunately, he survived that shooting. What interested you in her story?
I Shot Andy Warhol is the story of someone who is as much driven mad by the society as they are, you know, intrinsically mad, I think. I was interested in her isolation and that she had this sort of mad but visionary quality in her writing. That her critique of sexual politics, which is very extreme, you know, obviously, and in itself also kind of satirical, but was remarkably prescient. And she said things in like 1966, 67, that people weren't saying for years, until years later. And that this is someone who obviously had a vision of how she felt the world really worked that ran totally counter what everyone in society was telling her, which was that men were superior to women. And in a way that drove her mad, and I think she had, you know, schizophrenia. I mean, I think she had madness in her. But I found her story more poignant. I think it was someone who, in a way, also was born at the wrong time. If she had been born 10 years later, she might have found a much more sympathetic environment. Patrick Bateman is a very different character. He's, you know, he seems on the surface to be absolutely at the center of his world, you know, to be one of its finest specimens. And inside, he's, you know, this sort of monster.
Where were you in the late 1980s when American Psycho was set?
Well, I was working in television and documentaries in Britain. And I guess before that, I'd been a struggling freelance journalist. So it was the only time, first time I had ever made any money. So I was probably a yuppie myself. You know, I don't think you can satirize something if you haven't been a part of it. And I was working in Britain, but we would do a lot of filming trips to New York, which would mean, you know, staying in hotels and being on expense accounts. And so I did see some restaurants and some nightclubs, and it got a view of the stuff that we'd later be reconstructing.
Now, I understand that your father, Don Harron, was a Canadian actor and comedian?
Mm-hmm. Or is.
Is, okay,
is.
Yeah.
Still around.
What kind of work did he or does he do? I don't know if most Americans would be aware of it.
Well, actually, he was on Hee Haw for about 18 years, so I think a lot of Americans would be. he played one of the characters on Hee Haw. I mean, he's lived in Canada, but he used to fly down to Nashville. And he played the guy behind the radio desk on Hee Haw. And then he did, you know, my dad did movies, he did classical theater, he did all kinds of things. But for many Americans, that's where they would know him from.
Did his being in the entertainment business lead you into movie making at all?
No, because actually I started out as a journalist. So I guess I think when I started directing, you know, film, I realized that I was very comfortable with actors, and I'm sure that, you know, being brought up, you know, being the daughter of an actor helped. But originally I thought I'd be a writer. I mean, I think partly because when I was growing up, there weren't any women film directors that I knew of, and I don't think it really ever occurred to me that I could be one until much later.
Mm-hmm. No, you're very pregnant right now.
Yes.
You're due very soon?
Yes, in a month.
How has that affected your ability to
think
work? To work.
Well, fortunately, I didn't, I got pregnant after we finished shooting, thank God. I mean, I know women have made, Nancy Zavoca, I think, made two movies when she was pregnant, and I don't know how she did it, because it's so physically demanding. I got pregnant while I was editing, and I eventually had to tell my editor that I was pregnant because I kept falling asleep at the editing room. And, you know, luckily I had the editing, we'd actually hired editing facilities in my building, so I was able to run upstairs and take a nap. You know, it's strange having two different, you know, being so involved in both a film and a baby. But that's part of having, you know, I think a family if you're a woman director anyway, or a woman anything.
And of course, you know, you're You're carrying this baby at the same time that you're making this movie about somebody who's really quite gruesome.
Yeah.
And the acts that he commits. Did that affect you at all?
Some
people, when they're pregnant, they just want to expose, you know, the baby that they're carrying to, you know, calming sounds and beautiful music.
Yeah, well, that was not an option for me because, you know, I had to do all my sound editing and, you know, I would be sitting there in the final mix, you know, with a chainsaw sequence where we'd have to do it over and over and over again. So sometimes I would just go and sit in the outside lobby, you know, just to, because I would start feeling kicks. So yes, I mean, I sort of regretted that, but on the other hand, I don't feel that as a woman or as a mother that I am just going to make sort of lovely films or that I won't tackle violence or that I won't tackle the harsher side of things. You know, I don't think just because you have children, you know, I think having children changes, you know, one's life enormously, but it doesn't mean that it should change your whole artistic sensibility necessarily.
Well, Mary Harron, I thank you very much for talking with us, and good luck with your new baby.
Thank you.
And your new movie.
Thanks.
Mary Harron co-wrote and directed the film American Psycho. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.